Hello, friends. I'm Rosie Acosta, your host and guide on this journey to self-discovery and radical love. I've walked a path filled with challenges. Growing up in East LA during the 92 LA riots, it left me searching for meaning, for mentors, for a way to truly understand the purpose of life. But you know what I found? The power of conversation. As a first-gen Mexican-American, these conversations became my compass, offering insight, support, and an endless amount of inspiration. So I decided to create a space where we can share these conversations with you, our community. And that's how the Radically Loved podcast was born. Join me as we dive into topics like mindfulness, spirituality, self-love, and the keys to overall healthy living. I'm joined by my dear friend, fellow author, producer, and teacher, Tessa Tovar.
Hi, I'm Tessa, and I'm grateful to be part of this community because it teaches me so much about what it means to be human. Ever since I was a little one, I was always asking my dad the deeper questions in life. Why are we here? What happens when we are gone? What is the purpose of life? I love this show because I get to ask the questions that cut right to the meaning of life. I've learned that no matter how much we want the path to be clear or straightforward, it rarely is. And that is actually part of the beauty that creates a radically loved life.
Please do us a favor, share the episodes you love with your friends, and leave us a review. Together, we'll learn how to create a life that's truly, deeply, radically loved. Let's begin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Radically Loved podcast. This is Tessa. I'm hosting the show today on behalf of Rosie, and I'm so excited to introduce you to, actually reintroduce you to Laura Day, who has been on the podcast before. It's been a minute, so we're so excited to have her back. She's such an amazing, talented, intelligent, intuitive, who really breaks down and demystifies what it means to use your intuition, develop it. And so she's been practicing in New York, and she's a best time selling author. Actually, are you in New York, Laura? Am I saying that right?
I am. I'm between New York, LA, London, and Rome. But oh, gosh. I'm in New York right now.
Wow. How cool is that? Do you have a favorite place to stay, or do they each have like their own little best parts?
You know, I mean, I have, except for Rome, I have kind of homes or friends' homes. I mean, except for Paris, I have homes or friends' homes. So I like to stay in places I know. My mind wanders enough that I really like my actual environment just to be something I know. So I don't really look for the best neighborhood. I just like the familiar.
Oh, I hear you with that. Especially when you're, you know, in a different culture, different country, it's like having that familiarity is, I get so attached to like my favorite little coffee shop, my favorite little breakfast place, my favorite little whatever it is, that I just have a hard time branching out after that. So today there's, I have a bunch of things on my list, but I have been listening to your audiobook, and actually I have the hard copy right here, How to Rule the World from Your Couch, which is such a fascinating take on developing the practice of your intuition and beyond, because you definitely go beyond just what it means to use your intuition. And so I would love it if we could start off there with, defining what intuition means.
Well, you know, I think that the title of the book, so that's my sixth book, and it says it all for me. My first was Practical Intuition, and there are a few in between. But How to Rule the World from Your Couch really defines intuition for me, because intuition is your ability, and we all think we're fantasizing often when we do this, but your ability to actually move around in time, go into the future, go into somebody else's perspective. So move around in perspective, move around in space, view a remote location. And of course, many people are familiar with the military research into remote viewing. But so how to rule the world from your couch is really, how do we use our are extension of our senses. How do we use those non-local perceptions, things that aren't just right in front of you, to prepare us for what we encounter when we actually get off our couch? And how do we make those connections telepathically, which is person-to-person communication, but over a distance, not using technology? You know, back when there wasn't much technology to do that, you know, back in the 60s, it was easier to explain. Now we can, you know, it's interesting how technology really mimics intuition. So it really is, how do we adjust the world? How do we learn from the world and make the changes we need to make before we actually address it? So we make fewer mistakes in real time. We show up prepared. We avoid whenever possible obstacles. And we allow the learning that is a natural consequence of interfacing with others and interfacing with events. How do we let that learning to change us with the support and sometimes, you know, the benefit of privacy of our couch?
I love that. So interesting what you said about how technology mimics intuition. And I'm curious about that from the lens of, in your opinion, do you think that hinders our intuitive ability? Do we rely on it a little bit too much? And can that hinder us on our path towards being a more intuitive person?
I don't really think so. You know, one of the most important things is to demagicalize all of our abilities. You know, demagicalize intellect. Some people are better mathematicians. That doesn't make them smarter than those people who are off the charts verbally. You know, to take all of these little magical descriptions away from everything. And the most important thing with anything is your reality testing. So when I do this, do I get a result? When I look at this remotely, can I verify it? And often technology actually plays with our intuition. So for example, my phone makes no light, no sound, no nothing when someone texts me. And yet my two closest people, when they text me, or even when they're about to text me, I wake up and pick up my phone. So that really is verification. Or when you're texting at the same time, someone you haven't texted in a week. That again, verification. So it's really important not just to get the intuitive data, but to verify it. And I think technology really helps us do that because we have that quick contact in real time. You know, you're not always going to pick up a phone. You know, my day we had phones. That's how we communicated. You know, you're not always going to pick up a phone and have a chat, but you're far more likely to shoot off a three-word text. Unbelievable verifications, or what's happening in a meeting. You predicted something, someone, you know, thousands of miles away verifies what you said. So I really am always training my students to look for verification, to not take it face value. And for that, technology is, I think, incredibly helpful. You can also verify your facts. You think the market's going to move a certain way. Without having a monitor, like in the old days, you can just look on your computer and see what the price was, you know, a minute ago. So I think that we also have no choice but to embrace technology. So wasting time on resisting it is probably not going to be helpful, whereas finding ways to direct it as a society toward our benefit, toward our good, is going to, I think, be the winning game.
Yeah. You know, I've had a lot of conversations with people lately in terms of the fear around technology AI, such as ChatGPT, and feeling like that's going to take over a lot of jobs and people are going to be put out of work. And I'm not trying to like make this a political podcast by any means, but I do like what you're saying about embracing it and using it as a tool. At least that's what I'm hearing you say, using these things as a tool, learning how to work with them, and not necessarily being afraid of the future, the unknown.
Being cautious. I mean, I'm a naturally cautious person. I'm cautious about everything. I don't change the brand of my cheese without research. But on the other hand, when something is inevitable, if you close your eyes, you're going to get hit. So you know, seeing this is what's happening, this is inevitable. So how do we now take possession of it to the degree that we can, and how do we direct it is really important. In a sense, the difference between fantasy and intuition is A, reality testing, and B, your ability to implement the intuitive information or, you know, guidance, if you will, in a practical way in your life, because your job isn't to rise above life. You know, life is hard enough. Your job is really, how do I make my life more joyful, more productive, and a hell of a lot easier? Because if you just look at what you need to do the first hour when you wake up, for most of you, that's a lot. And you don't pat yourself on the back. You just expect more. And I don't think that's a winning strategy. You know, we are mammals first. And we need to really engage all of our tools to make this task of surviving and thriving easier and hopefully more joyful.
Do you know if you're getting enough magnesium? Because 4 out of 5 Americans aren't. And that's a big problem, because magnesium is involved in more than 300 biochemical reactions in your body. Today, I want to talk to you about the most common signs to look for that could indicate you're magnesium deficient. Listen carefully to the end, because there's a special offer happening and this could be exactly what you need. Okay, here we go. Are you irritable or anxious? Do you struggle with insomnia? Do you experience muscle cramps or twitches? Do you have high blood pressure? Are you sometimes constipated? There are dozens of symptoms of magnesium deficiency, so these are just a few of the most common ones. Now, here is what most people don't know. Taking just any magnesium supplement won't solve your problem, because most supplements use the cheapest kinds that your body can't use or absorb. That's why I exclusively recommend Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually use and absorb. All Bioptimizer supplements are best in class. If for some reason you feel differently, you can get a full refund, no questions asked. They are so confident that they offer 365-day money-back guarantee. Just go to www.bioptimizers.com/radically loved. Use the promo code radicallyloved10. You can get gifts with your purchase. You can get 2 travel-sized bottles of Magnesium Breakthrough. Act fast. This is a limited time offer. Go to bioptimizers.com/radicallyloved and use the promo code radicallyloved10.
How would you say one would go about, what are some practical ways to go about beginning reality testing?
Someone's mad at you, call, have a conversation. You feel like, I belong to all these good news channels, mm-hmm. because if you really look at what sells, I mean, you know, mammals are always looking for dire circumstances so we can survive. We want to look for the threats. But I, you know, it's weighted toward threat because of that. And because we're animals, not because all that's happening is bad stuff. So I belong to all these good news networks because they validate, oh, well, this is something good that happened today. You know, this is where the market rose today. This is where, you know, malaria was eradicated this year. This is, and I think that finding as much as possible, and intuition does help with that, a balanced view, because we tend to see based on our beliefs anyway. So there's a whole lot we don't see. But one of the things that I think is so helpful is when you have a goal, all of a sudden what you don't see, little glimmers come in, because your goal puts pressure on your habits, your subconscious, the things you thought about the world, the things you thought about yourself. But it also directs intuition to find you opportunities and to identify the new obstacles. And in doing so, you know, we forget as human beings how profoundly resilient we are. So in doing so, you also acquire or unearth new tools. And it really it enriches your possibilities. And I think that that's really what we want to do. We want to enrich our possibilities. We want to do that for our families, our community, our world, our children, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I love that. You know, as you were speaking, I was thinking about kind of the conundrum of, let's say, you know, I feel like someone is pretty lucky to know what they want out of life. When they get up in the morning, they have that specific goal in mind, or they have that, like, I know what my purpose is. I think it seems to me that it's not always the case for a lot of us. Some of us are kind of like floundering around trying to figure out, well, what is my purpose? What lights me up? What makes me happy? And so I'm wondering what would you say about using intuition to really tap into your life's purpose or honing your specific life goals?
I don't know that that's a really good use of intuition. I mean, it is true that purpose is the number one indicator of health and survival in older adults. You know, purpose is super important because it gives context to everything around us. Mm-hmm. However, you know, you could be between purpose A and purpose B. You know, if you always have the same purpose, you're not growing very much. I think that one of the things that's so helpful is the opposite of intuition, which is this mobile attention going all over the place, is mindfulness. Sometimes you don't know what your purpose is, but when you address effectively what's in front of you, you will find that your purpose at that time emerges. Also, I think as I get older, I'm more suspicious of the stories I tell over and over again. Mm-hmm. I'm more suspicious of the I am, I believe, I didn't, I wouldn't, I never, I, you know, always. I'm more suspicious of those statements and much more eager to be resilient, because interaction with your environment gives you purpose, brings out the purpose, brings out your beliefs and transforms them as it does. And, I do think that I wrote a book called The Circle, which is a system I really live by, because most intuition is just a flood of information. It's not really useful unless you can apply it. The first element of the circle is for you to have a goal. So everything that happens has context, you know, even if it has nothing to do with your goal, you have a form to put it in, because we have form, life has form, people have a certain architecture. But sometimes people say, well, I don't have a goal. And I said, well, that's why it's called the circle. There are many other elements that can lead you to all the other elements in the circle. One are outer roadblocks. Perhaps you're dealing with some real realities outside of yourself that you need to deal with. You need to find a new apartment. You're not making enough money. Maybe you're dealing with an inner roadblock. You know, you want something, but you don't feel good enough, and you have to challenge that before you can actually even fully desire or know what you desire. Maybe you need to make space. Maybe your life between the 20 minutes of meditation, the half hour of exercise, the 20 minutes of mantra, the 20 minutes of a hot sauna, all the things we do for 20 minutes in a day, supposedly to maintain health, you wouldn't have time for basic hygiene if you did all of those things. So it really is important. This circle has 9 elements. It's really important to start where you are. Where are you? And boy, are we all great. I mean, I have so many students, so I see what they go through. They spend so much time beating themselves up for where they are. But where you are, you know, the bottom of the barrel is a great place to start. You've lost everything. There's nothing in your hands. You're not spending all that time and energy holding on. The slate's clear. It's tough, but the slate's clear. I've been at the bottom of the barrel a lot of times. And if you've never been at the bottom of the barrel, you're missing a lot, because there's a lot of treasures down there in the slime in the dark. So, you know, I think that the practice of mindfulness, which is hard, because what mindfulness does that fantasy doesn't, and even that intuition doesn't, is mindfulness doesn't say in 10 years you've got to clean up the kitchen. It says, right now you got a dirty kitchen. Get off your bottom and go clean it all up. You know, it demands of you The other thing is, when you're mindful, you actually have a hierarchy of goals. This is, oh, I'm mindful. I'm feeling lonely. That's a need. All of a sudden, intuition, here's a need, because intuition is a survival skill. Where do we find you, companionship? When you allow yourself to feel it, it becomes a target for your intuition. Oh, I need more money. Your intuition all of a sudden presents things. Now, then you go to a different part of the circle, the inner roadblock. Oh, no, I could never apply for that job. Do you know how many students I've had to push to apply for things they weren't qualified for? Because what people say in a job, you know, request is rarely what they want. So it really is, you know, all the parts of your life enhance each other. But it does start with being right where you are, trying if you can to give yourself some credit for the very difficult task of survival, and then allowing yourself to find the treasures to do it better.
Mm, that's such a helpful reframe. I think we're in, you know, I think about that, and I think about on the flip side of the question that I asked about, you know, having a sense of purposelessness. There's the purpose. There's the person who may be really striving and really goal oriented, and then like health starts to break down, and you listed off all of these things that, you know, we're supposed to do to create mindfulness. Well, if we did all of these things, we wouldn't have any time in our day to, you know, do task oriented productive things. And so I guess I'm thinking about this from the lens of, you know, knowing when to quit, knowing when to take a break, knowing when to change gears.
Well, you know, one of the things I posted on Instagram the other day, because I give my group task to work on every day, was it doesn't have to feel good to be good. However, it's, you know, if you really want something, there's no good time to give up. But if it's not happening, it's a sure sign that both the subconscious and intuition need to adapt. You know, that there's something you're willfully, albeit perhaps unconsciously, not seeing, not willing to acknowledge. It's not even that if we did everything for mindfulness, we wouldn't have time. It's not just mindfulness. We did everything for, you're supposed to make contact, you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to do that. On some level, it doesn't have to feel good to be good, but you do need to feel that there is a reason that you're doing it that does bring satisfaction. I'm exhausted at night. I'm a morning person. There's a reason I put dinner on the table. And it doesn't feel good. I'm always tired. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't even feel good while I'm eating it, but it does feel good to feed my family. So, you know, I think that if you are not experiencing something as part of you in some way, even if it's difficult, then that's a good, not an intuitive sign, that's just a good logical sign to investigate it again. And, you know, some of you, for example, have hard jobs, especially the younger you are. Many of you have, you know, kind of crap jobs or difficult bosses. You don't have your power yet, just in terms of chronology in the world. But that does have purpose. Go in there, reframe it, learn. Don't get into it. Don't waste your time on the shoulda, woulda, coulda, or they shouldn't do this. Just, you know, when you can adapt and then, you know, be subversive from within, you've mastered it. And when you have that within, you'll find that synchronistically the new job comes up. And then, of course, the trick is to remember how hard it was when you are older hiring young people.
Yes, that's a great reminder. Absolutely. I wanted to speak to the power of words. I know that you're passionate and you speak to this around watching your words and the world is listening.
First of all, for yourself, the words you use are important. You know, we do attach experience to words. So even the way you structure a sentence, you're in that situation. It didn't just happen to you. You know, find the power in that. But really, more than your environment hearing your words, your environment hears your experience. Now, that is why often when you're in stress, you get opportunistic people who all of a sudden, you know, partners often who all of a sudden appear because you're weak. They're getting your low hanging fruit. So it doesn't mean that you shouldn't experience that, but the more you can find your own mechanisms of health, of strength, of mindfulness, being able to go through whatever you're going through, but then a way you reconstitute, for some people it's meditation, for some people it's exercise, for some people it's nutrition. For all of us, it's good sleep architecture. You know, for all of us, it's good nutrition. For all of us, it's different levels of healthy social contact. For all of us, it's limiting toxicities, not just in what we eat, but in relationship. You know, it's so important. You know, we all have that really good friend who's really fun, but we always feel worse after we talk to them or are with them. You know, you've got it. That's kryptonite. So what you experience is red. Now, no one experiences, got to have pretty good drugs to experience, perfect nirvana. But your dialogue with yourself needs to be supportive and empowering. And there's a big thing, and it's been there for decades, of love yourself. Yeah, love yourself. But if you do something unlovable, correct it. You know, this kind of blanket forgiveness. I think you forgive what you can't actually correct in life. But if you can correct it, correct it. And I love, there's a tradition in Judaism that every year, on a day of atonement, you ask for forgiveness. But if you've asked three times and they have not forgiven you, the sin is theirs. Mm. And I think on some level, you know, we're taught this very esoteric experience of our responsibility and interaction. But, saying you're sorry, not a bad thing. Admitting to something when it's not going to be damaging to you, not a bad thing. Making amends, not a bad thing. If your carbon footprint is big, doing something, you know, balancing the things that at least for you make you unlovable to you. Because often where you find yourself unlovable are things that you can change. And why wouldn't you?
It can be scary. I feel like especially apologizing can be scary because it means admitting that you were wrong and that you've hurt someone else. How do we do that? How do we practice sincere apology and stand in that? Maybe it's shame. I'm not sure how we're each labeling ourselves, but I know for me, apologizing feels like I feel very small. I feel very humbled, which is not a bad thing. That's a good thing, right? But how do I do that and own it? And
well, you know, I think that I think there are a lot of answers to that question, and I would even have a lot of answers. But I want to give a helpful suggestion, which is in relationship, you're you, the other person is the other person, but the relationship itself is almost a person on its own, and you don't want to injure that contact, that person that you've created that is the relationship. And I don't know, what is the prize for being right exactly? I mean, I don't, I find it hard when someone once gave someone close to me a piece of advice, it costs nothing to apologize. I find it hard to apologize without actually believing it, without the integrity. But when I've done something wrong, I feel like I injure both myself and the other person to not say, I did this, you know, I'm sorry. Somehow getting away with it injures that person that is the relationship, but also actually injures me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's such a helpful reminder, too. Well, and this leads me to my next question, and that's around crisis, and it crisis being a thing not necessarily to strive for, but or you know, like a breaking point, or you talked about being at the bottom of the barrel. How does that really lead to change, and maybe not something to necessarily be avoided at all costs?
Well, you can't. I mean, the problem with crisis is you can't avoid it at all costs. Crisis happens to you. You don't have a choice to say, gee, I don't think I'll have a crisis today. You know, crisis is when events, experiences overwhelm your ability to cope. And that is, then you are in crisis. Ideally, you're flexible enough and aware enough and intuitive enough that never happens. But that is kind of, that is rare. I wrote a book called Welcome to Your Crisis and got advice from so many psychiatrists and neurologists, you know, had so many readers on that book, because when you're in crisis, things have fallen apart. And it is so important to be able to have what I like to think of as a prosthetic exoskeleton, you know, have a superhero suit that you can put on until those pieces reconstitute themselves in their new and more adaptive form. Because crisis happens because we are overwhelmed, or because we have refused to be aware of, acknowledge, or adapt to certain things. And often it's a combination of all of the above. I mean, none of us, we don't see what we don't see. I've walked into the same wall many, many times. And, you know, hopefully, you know, I always think, oh, well, now I'll recognize that wall. But it is a work in progress. But the wonderful thing about crisis, and the reason I say wonderful and crisis in the same sentence, is you have no choice. If you're in crisis, you're in crisis. So we've got to find something adaptive about it. The wonderful thing is the old has been ripped away. It's all fresh ground. And if you're mindful, and if you find the kind of support that you need, and it is there, it may not be there from the person you want it. It may not be there in the exact form you want it, but it is there. People who say they're lonely, I say, go to an AA meeting. They say, I'm not an alcoholic. I say, well, there's some anonymous meeting. There's some church or mosque or synagogue or singing group or gathering in the park or free event. You know, you may not have it from the person who broke your heart, who you want it from, but it is somewhere. And so in crisis, we need to start again. Being mindful, and what can I do? What is the can do in this moment? When COVID hit, I started going on live, a tradition that I have kept almost every morning on Instagram. And I would start with, okay, I know there's plenty we can't do. We can't go out. We can't be with our loved ones. We can't go to work. We can't get disposable diapers. What is the can do? What is the can do? Oh, you can take out your art supplies. Oh, you can do that little workout on the internet you've been meaning to do, but because you've had your job is 2 hours from home and it's a 4-hour round trip and blah. What is the can do right now? And when you use crisis to survive, to find the can do, what you find is that in a very short time, you have a life that was the life you actually in your deepest heart wanted.
Yeah. Oh, what a beautiful invitation. You know, thinking back to COVID, for me, I feel like I was really lucky to have it be a time when I felt like I could truly rest. And that felt like that was the first time I had rested in since I had summer vacation in high school or college. And I'm thinking now life has gotten back to that almost untenable pace. And so I'm curious, for those that feel similarly, how would you recommend finding more of a balance in our lives? And maybe it's a cultural thing, I'm not sure, but how do we find more balance in our lives between rest and productivity, and not let that be the thing, that striving be the thing that, you know, says, oh, well, I'm not valuable enough. I can't make enough money if I rest, you know?
Sometimes rest is productivity. And there are, you know, For example, the way intuition works is you would ask intuition that question. You would make it your target for a week. You would write it down before you go to sleep. So in your dream state, both intuition and subconscious work on it. Because there are many things. I mean, when I have a lunch break in a workshop, I don't really, you know, I'll drink some high calorie something. But I sit and I just close my eyes and breathe for 10 minutes. Because just, and I'm not a meditator, but just going in my little world allows me to walk through that door again. We all define rest differently. My husband's definition of rest is going out with 40 of his closest friends. My definition of rest is a sensory deprivation tank. So, you know, I think that it's very important to define these things and also to know they change. And being productive often comes in fits and starts. You know, it is true that we do need to do those basic tasks to survive. However, you know, you don't have to go to the gym, walk to work. You know, you don't have to spend hours preparing food these days. There's great prepared things. You know, you like find, even in your work, what is what you need to do? What isn't what you need to do? But often it's in those times of walking, resting, cuddling, that you get the greatest inspirations. My husband and I both keep a little pad. I know that most of you don't write anymore, but we keep a little pad and pen near our bed. You can do it with a voice note too. Because often it's when we're cuddled up and relaxing that all of a sudden that wonderful idea can emerge. The feeling of striving is often not when we're most effective.
Mm-hmm.
And it is important, I have experienced and observed in my students, that it is important to be also engaged. You know, the finding yourself journey can be done in 20 minutes a day.
Mm.
And, you know, it's so important. I think one of the things we forget, and especially as an intuitive, because intuitive is all kind of a little out of body, is that we are animals. You know, feed yourself, make sure you get pet, make sure you get enough sleep, make sure you're warm enough, make sure you're cool enough, make sure you're wearing things that make you feel comfortable. Cashmere is my drug.
Mm.
And, you know, when you take care of that, it's amazing what else you can do. And if you are in a toxic environment, find a way to be less permeable, but also allow intuition to make you aware of new environments where you could transition.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
And
thank
listen,
you.
There are a lot of people, go online and search people who have, you know, become world famous after the age of 40, 50, 60, even 70. We're all in such a hurry. Don't be in such a hurry. It's all over soon enough.
What a beautiful reminder. Laura, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. I just have a few last questions. Well, one is a logistical question, and that is, where do you like to connect with people most on the socials?
I'm on Instagram almost every day. People exchange readings and healings at Laura Day Intuit. If you go to lauraday.com or practicalintuition.com and sign up for the newsletter, I travel all the time. My husband's a screen and TV writer. I travel for lectures. So we have a thing where we try to work where each other has to go. So I teach all over, and I'll often just throw up a free event at a Soho House or a Unity Church or something. So please sign up for the newsletter at practicalintuition.com or lauraday.com. And of course, I've written 3 books that are workshops. They really are. And you can create your own groups. And really, you know, you are your hardest person to be intuitive about, because you know your wishes and dreams and the information that scares you. The detachment of doing a reading for another is really helpful to train your intuition. Mm-hmm. So it's really helpful to do the book in a book club or a group. And of course, now you can do it by Zoom or any of these other other things. And it's a very helpful way to engage intuition and then write your intuitions down, the things that come out of left field, because your mind is a messy place. And when you begin to verify them, when they happen, you say, oh, wow, I saw this 3 months ago. I didn't even know what I meant by this, and it's happened. Then all of a sudden you allow yourself to make your intuition more useful to you.
Hmm. I love that idea of practicing on others as a means to kind of, I guess, greasing the wheels a little bit in terms of developing that intuitive ability. Okay, so last question. The ethos of this podcast and the title, the namesake of the podcast, Radically Loved. Rosie created this community, and we continue to hope to develop the community to create a space that inspires, that teaches, where people come to learn more about themselves and the world at large. And Radically Loved really is, you know, a question of how do you feel radically loved by whatever it is that you believe in terms of a higher power, whether that be God or source or universe, whatever you want to call it. So the question for you, Laura, is how do you feel radically loved?
Well, I don't believe in the higher power. I think we are all one energy. And so when we connect with another, we're connecting with everything. Just like when someone connects with us, they're connecting with everything, but through the lens of being an individual. And I think being an individual is a hard thing to do and always a work in progress. So I feel radically loved when someone takes a moment out of their journey to support me in mine, whether it's a hug or someone holding the elevator or, you know, talking about our Instagram mornings or bringing me brownies, you know, any interactions that are supportive. And when people allow me to do that for them, because I think we're so secretive about what we need. And we should be saying, I need this, because it gives other people the opportunity to connect with source. Source is all of us.
Mm. Oh, that was such a, I love that answer, Laura. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hey, friends. Thank you so much for listening to the Radically Loved podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. It really helps. Also, don't forget to check out the Mindful Love Hub on Substack. This episode was produced by Tessa Tovar, music by DJ Taz Rashid.